This is the story. A strange story of a young professor who wrote the best-selling book in American history. And you'll hear another story. The story of a juggler who went looking for a drink and found a great career. Yes, this is the story. The barge, heavily laden with cargo, moves slowly through the Erie Canal. And from the passenger deck, the young English professor watched the men and horses on the towpath strain at their burden and wondered if he had made the right decision. He'd had the offer from the Ohio College to teach English, and he also had an offer from a New York publishing house to write a textbook. For 2 weeks, he had debated the two offers, and in the end, it was a simple matter of economics that made him decide in favor of the Ohio position. The teaching job guaranteed him a salary of $600 a year. The job of writing the textbook would have guaranteed him nothing. But still, he could not help but wonder, as he moved westward through the Erie Canal, if he should not have been less cautious, if he shouldn't have gambled on that textbook. The professor's wife, standing beside him on the deck of the barge, sensed the debate that raged within him. But she didn't express her own feelings in the matter, except to remind her husband that he had made his decision, and that nothing was to be gained by constantly questioning the wisdom of it. The professor smiled down at his wife, took her hand, and gave it a confident squeeze, saying,
"You're quite right, my dear, and from now on I shall look ahead to the future and not back at the past."
And he kept his word. From then on, he and his wife talked of what life would probably be like in Ohio, of the quiet, comfortable, studious life they would live. His $600 a year salary was modest, even in the year of 1825, but it would be sufficient for them to have the little white house that they had pictured in their mind's eye. They had no idea of what the college to which they were going was like, but they saw it as a small, quiet, pretty place. Well-kept buildings set in an expansive greensward. They built a rosy picture of their destination and their future. And the professor even came to wonder why he ever doubted that the choice he had made wasn't the right one.
"It's absolutely right, my dear. Of course it is. I was foolish to think otherwise."
After 2 days on the canal, the young couple transferred to a coach that, after 3 rough days on the road, deposited them in the town in which the college was located. Their coach was met by an old man who drove them to the college in an ancient wagon. And as the wagon bounced over a rutty, dusty road, the professor asked,
What is the college like, sir?"
The old man thought for a moment and then replied,
"Well, it ain't like any school you're used to, I guess. Nope. You and the president of the college is the only teachers. Yeah. Got a barn where you'll hold classes. You and the missus will have to live in an old log cabin we fixed up for you."
As the old man talked on, describing in detail the college and the life that faced the new professor and his wife, grim, melancholy smiles touched the young couple's lips as they remembered their mental pictures of a small white cottage in which to live and a broad green campus on which to work. The old man finally pulled the wagon to a halt. The college was even more grim, rugged, uninviting than the old man had pictured it. And the young professor, seeing tears of disappointment well up in his wife's eyes, put his arm around her shoulder and whispered comfortingly,
No, don't worry, my dear. We won't stay here a moment longer than is necessary."
But even that might mean weeks, months, even years, the professor knew. There was just one chance for a comparatively quick escape. So the very evening of his arrival, he dispatched a letter to the New York publishers, telling them he would have a manuscript in their hands as quickly as possible. And no sooner was the letter posted than the professor went to work on the book. Every night, after long, hard days spent not only in teaching, but also in carpentry and land clearing, he wrote, sometimes giving himself not more than an hour of sleep before starting a new day of drudgery. Finally, his manuscript was completed, and though he was satisfied with his work, the professor felt called upon to sound a note of caution.
"Now, let's not count upon it too much, my dear. It may not sell as much as one copy."
And so the professor posted his manuscript, hoping that it would at least provide him the few dollars he needed to take himself and his wife away from the drab, hard life in the frontier college. His goal was modest, ridiculously so, in view of the destiny of his manuscript. Little did he realize that he had written a book that was to sell more copies than any other book ever printed in the United States, except the Bible. That within 84 years after he had written it, 122 million copies would come off the presses. That it would be the one book that would teach generation after generation of American children to read. For that young professor who wrote a school book as the means of escaping from his job in a frontier college was William Holmes McGuffey, the author of a book that has become a vital part of the history of America, The McGuffey Reader. Yes, this is the story. It was not to drown his troubles in drink that the vaudeville player stepped into the saloon next to the theater. It was lunchtime. He was hungry. And the saloon offered, as was the custom of drinking establishments in those days, free food. With the purchase of a nickel glass of beer, the vaudevillian could dine reasonably well. So he strode to the bar, ordered a glass of beer, and then repaired to the food tray. As long as he had a nickel for a glass of beer, he could eat. But as small as his financial need was, the entertainer, a juggler by trade, was deeply concerned about fulfilling it. For some reason that was beyond his comprehension, the art of juggling had fallen upon evil days in the entertainment world. Whereas he had once been able to get a booking on any one of a number of vaudeville circuits, he was now encountering difficulty obtaining even a one-night stand. Just a few minutes before he had entered the saloon to partake of its free lunch, an agent had told him,
"Juggling acts are a dime a dozen these days. If you sing, dance, have a fast patter to go with the act, well, okay. I can get you a spot. But just a straight juggling routine? Not a chance."
Upon leaving the booking office, the juggler had taken a quick inventory of his talents. Could he sing? No, not a note. Could he dance? He thought about that for a moment, and then decided that he could probably sing better than he could dance. How about a line of patter? He remembered a couple of old jokes he'd once heard, but that would hardly pass as patter. And so the juggler, as he munched a free lunch and washed it down with beer, dismally concluded that as far as show business was concerned, his present period of unemployment threatened to go on indefinitely. It was on this bleak note that he finished his lunch. But he found that though his appetite was satisfied, his thirst was unquenched. And so, extracting his last 25-cent piece from his pocket, he returned to the bar. He ordered a drink of rye, but when the bartender started to pour him a chaser, the juggler stopped him.
"Water, my good man, is a great aid to bathing and navigation, but it also rush pipes."
With that, he downed his drink, smacked his lips, and commented,
"Ah, the stuff of life."
The bartender with a bottle posed inquired if the juggler could stand another.
"Could I stand another? Oh, yes, my good man, I could. But my pocketbook can't."
And it was then that he spotted the sign over the bar which suggested a solution to the draught that was about to befall him. For anyone making a run of 40 or more at billiards, a diversion which was offered in the rear of the saloon, the house would extend $1 in trade. Thoughtfully, the juggler said,
"Used to know a thing or two about the fine old game of pool when I was a lad. I think I'll take you up on that offer. Keep your bottle of rye handy for me, my good man."
And with that, the juggler stepped to the rear of the saloon. He selected a cue with grave care, swung it two or three times as though it were a gold club, and then announced in a loud voice,
"Gather round, my young neophytes, and let me, an old master, demonstrate the finer points of this good old American pastime."
The other players left their games and congregated around the juggler's table. The crowd snickered with amusement as he doffed his hat and coat, stretched, struck a few boxing poses, and then shot, scattering the rectangle of billiard balls at the far end of the table. And then, while he kept up a running commentary upon the game that kept his audience roaring with laughter, the juggler started running up a score. He made the most difficult shots look easy. His score mounted 20, 30, 40, 50. He had won a dollar in trade from the saloon. But when he tried to put his cue aside, the spectators refused to let him leave the table. They wanted more of his hilarious and yet expert billiard playing. And when the juggler protested that he felt the need of some liquid refreshments, several of the men dashed to the bar, returning with a bottle of rye. Suddenly, the juggler stopped. Standing in front of him was the booking agent who had less than an hour before turned him out of his office. Tears of laughter were streaming down the agent's face as he approached the juggler and gasped,
Why didn't you tell me about this routine? Why, this is one of the funniest acts I've ever seen. You know what? I can get you 72 weeks on any circuit in the country with this act."
The juggler stared at the agent, refusing to believe that his quest for a drink could be rewarded so magnificently. Indeed, so skeptical was he that he would scarcely believe his good fortune even when he had signed the contract. But it was true. The juggler had gone looking for a free lunch and found a career that was to see him rise to the rank of one of the greatest comedians in the history of the American theater. A man who was to become a star of stage, screen, and radio. One whose florid complexion, bulbous nose, and colorful, robust humor was to win him a permanent place in the history of the entertainment world. For, as you have undoubtedly guessed, the juggler who found fame when all he was looking for was a drink was...
Fields is the name, a good man. Capital F, small I, small E, small L, small D, small S. Oh, yes, Fields.
Yes, the never-to-be-forgotten W.C. Fields. This is the story.